Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:04 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Summer Time, and today is March 14th, approaching the Ides of March. Well, I thought that today we'd certainly kick off with the pound, and certainly it is sustaining the breakout. But that doesn't mean that we don't have volatility. There's been a lot of volatility over the last few days. Every time the UK looks like it's going to be closer to the EU, the pound rallies, and that by taking the no deal Brexit off the table, that is a tailwind for the pound, at least in the short term. But we don't yet have an answer, and it's unlikely we're going to have an answer in the next few weeks. The big question is, I think there are two big questions, in fact. The first is going to be, how long is the extension going to be? If it is out to June, it's unlikely the UK will contest the European elections. If it is longer than that, the UK will contest those elections. And the UK electorate has got a clear interest in supporting as many Eurosceptic candidates as they can muster. But of course, that's an additional uncertainty. But the much bigger question is, what about the next general election in the UK? Because from my visits to the UK over the course of the last 12 months, the one thing that has come through loud and clear is that the vast majority of people are completely disillusioned with the political process. And that is a recipe for polarization. And but perhaps more importantly, support for fringe elements. And that really suggests that when we think about the outlook for the pound, it really does question how much further it is going to rally. I mean, certainly we could have a breakout and it could get back up to 130. But then, of course, we have to start questioning how sustainable is that, because the Bank of England obviously wants to try and raise interest rates. They want to get off the lower bound here. They've raised rates twice, but really the first interest rate hike was the reversal of the cut following the Brexit vote. So I think it's really appropriate to say they've only raised once. When we start to look at government bond yields internationally, well, the bond market is just not convinced that the UK is going to be able to raise rates, but that, and probably nobody else is either. The gilt yield is at 1.22% over the next decade. It's at the lower side of its range. Now, there has been a very mild upward bias to these yields over the course of the last 2 years, but it's a big ask to see this yield back above the trend mean anytime soon while we still have this uncertainty. But if we then go and look at other government bond yields internationally, well, what we're presented with is a great deal of commonality. So the 10-year in the US is down to 2.6%, and it is also trading below its trend mean. Then, when we look at, for example, what we have in Australia, then the Australian yield is trending downwards, and it is now testing the lows from back in 2016. That's amid, I think, widespread speculation that the RBA is going to be cutting interest rates. And obviously, that is starting to have an effect on the Aussie dollar. It's steady around the 70 cent level. And that has been a key area of support over the course of the last few years. It certainly bounced very emphatically from that level back in 2016. But we're going to have to see some form of catalyst to really reignite interest in the bullish story. And that's just not readily apparent when there's the potential for interest rates to continue to be cut. It's only going to widen the interest rate differential that exists between the Aussie dollar and the US dollar. Then, if we start to think about India, well, the Indian 10-year government bond yield is, I think, rather topical. because it's also trading below the trend mean. We've had a pretty meaningful move in terms of demand for bonds over the course of the last 6 months, and the moderation in that demand over the first 2 months of this year has been pretty modest. What we are starting to see now is that the Indian rupee is trading back above the trend mean for the first time in about a year. There have been a number of false dawns for the rupee, and the most recent of those was back at the beginning of 2018. Prior to that, it really did look like we were getting a first step above the base, and that unceremoniously failed in 2018. So the rupee is now starting to trade back above the trend mean again. That's probably not going to be enough to convince anybody really that it is about to strengthen meaningfully. But India has got a vast young population. For instance, there's probably going to be something in the order of 15 to 17 million people voting for the first time in the upcoming election. Credit growth is picking up again, and the Bombay Banks Index is at a new all-time high. So that is very suggestive of credit growth. Some of the tightening measures that were imposed in the third and fourth quarters were very clearly focused on a small number of institutions. There has been some incredibly wide variability in the performance of banks in India. Well, Yes Bank is now trading back above the trend mean. D1 Housing Finance was the epicenter of risk, and the details of what exactly had been going on there are still coming out. And because this was the epicenter of risk, it's probably the candidate that is most likely to experience a type 3 bottom, which could be considered either a flat line or a sleeper base. But we don't really have clear evidence just yet that the lows are in fact in. Meanwhile, if we look at, for example, Axis Bank, it's hard to see from the chart that anything had really happened untoward at all, and it's been pushing on to new high ground since really the end of the third quarter. That was the first time it broke up and out of the base and then consolidated in the region of the upper side of the base, or this at least long term, or 3 to 4 year range. But when we look at the state-owned banks, they've also been performing because they weren't the subject of the kind of investigations that were going into some of the private lenders. So State Bank of India is now firming within its range, and it has been ranging below, mostly below 300 rupees since 2010. So that is a lot of lateral trading. If the credit markets do start to free up in India, then that is likely to be rather positive for the banking sector. Another anecdote that Mrs. Tracy shared with me last night was that, and hope, thankfully, she's going to be back from China next week. I'm looking forward to hearing everything that she's experienced while away. But she was speaking with a Singaporean couple in the gym at her hotel. They're in Guangzhou because they're in the process of moving their chemicals business out of China and into India. And the reason they're doing that is, on the one hand, because of the political situation deteriorating in China, which is raising a great number of uncertainties. But that was really only the, I guess, the straw that broke the camel's back. What was really concerning them was the rising costs of doing business. And that was the reason that they've decided to move the entire operation out of, I think what she was saying was that it was 4 to 5 different locations within China. They're moving the entire suite of operations to India. The spouse of the couple wasn't particularly happy. She enjoys her trips to Guangzhou, as indeed we do. But the clear business case was to move to India because of costs. because one of the I think the long-term benefits that India has is this vast young population and a clear incentive among the political class to provide that population with jobs. The only possible way they're going to do that is to attract manufacturing. So there, by fits and starts, that is finally starting to occur in India. That's, I think, one of the clearest reasons to be bullish about the country. But what I thought also was particularly interesting is that the rupee today was firm, and one of the reasons why people, I think, do pay attention to India is because right now it does not have a great deal of influence from the wider global economy. But when we look at some of the other regional currencies in Asia, then the Thai baht, for example, has started to weaken again, having strengthened all the way through to the 31 area. And the SET index has just about started to steady in the region of the trend mean, but I think it's quite clear that there is a sequence of lower rally highs, and it's going to have to, at a minimum, sustain a move above the trend mean to really confirm a return to demand dominance. The Indonesian market has steadied, but the Malaysian market has been a regional underperformer, and we also have a sequence of lower rally highs there over the course of the last year. Then the Indonesian market did steady in here today, but when we look at, for example, the Philippines, well, the Philippine composite has been rather steady over the course of the last few years. It really hasn't gone anywhere, but the fact is that that's simply in nominal prices, because the Philippine peso has got one of the clearest patterns of underperformance of any currency, and the dollar is starting to strengthen again from the region of that 52 area. There have been numerous occasions on which the peso had strengthened through the moving average on in the course of this dollar uptrend, and there's potentially that this is another one of those cases. So it's rather important that if one were bullish of the Philippines, that the currency at least should be able to hold its low around 54, and I think that's rather doubtful. Now, when then if we pull back and think about the fact that the Australian dollar has been rather weak, well, that should be positive for the Australian market, and it was in positive territory in here today. The outlook for Australia with the potential for lower interest rates, well, that should be supportive of asset prices, and we are certainly seeing some evidence of renewed enthusiasm for the Australian market. The resources sector was also in positive territory in here today. It's only reported on a closing basis, but it has held the breakout so far to new recovery highs. Then, when we look at the Japanese market, the Nikkei was in mildly negative territory in here today. This looks like a consolidation in the region of the trend mean, but it really does have to push back above the trend mean, and that's represented by the 22,000 level, in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The banking sector has been clearly underperforming, and there is the potential that what we're seeing right now is a higher reaction low, but it has got a lot of work to do in order to really confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Then, if we before looking at Wall Street, what I also found interesting in here today was the fact that the Colombian market has been doing better. It is certainly doing better than some of its neighbors, but that is pushing on now to a new recovery high. Of course, Colombia is a major commodity exporter, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but that's really quite bullish action that we've seen over the course of the last few weeks. The Brazilian market is also doing better. So we're definitely seeing some uptick in interest for commodity exporting nations. And part of the reason for that is because we are definitely seeing an uptick in interest for the commodities themselves. Lead in particular is starting to turn upwards and has bounced from around this 2000 level. Then if we look at the zinc price, then that is also starting to do better here. And it is now squarely above the region of the trend mean. The copper price was not quite as firm over the last few days, but it has so far at least held this break above the trend mean. And then we have the nickel price. Well, I'll put up the ETFS nickel because we get an updated daily price for that, and it was in negative territory in here today, but so far it has been able to hold the move above the trend mean. So we definitely are starting to see interest coming through, and that each of the industrial metals are not all performing exactly the same, but there is a broad pattern of recovery going on. And the only reason for that could be because economic growth is picking up, or that it's really tied to the outlook for China. And the Chinese markets having popped on the upside in the last 3 or 4 weeks, they continue to consolidate. So we can see clearly that the ebbing of short-term demand for the industrial resources is being mirrored by the ebbing of demand in the Chinese market. So there is a very clear correlation there, and that's there's certainly an argument that that is not a mistake. Then the gold market in here today was in negative territory. It was down $13. It was mildly off the lows in here today. There's potentially support building going on here in the region of the trend mean. It certainly needs to hold the region of the trend mean if this is going to if investors are going to conclude that this is a consolidation. Silver prices were down in a somewhat more dynamic manner and came back to test the $15.15 level. $15 itself is the key psychological level for silver, and that really does need to hold if a really quite or a much deeper pullback is to be avoided. And platinum prices were also in negative territory in here today, down $16. There has been an upward bias to trading over the course of the last month, but that psychological $800 level really needs to continue to hold. And platinum, or sorry, palladium was pretty much unchanged in here today. Then we have oil prices, and when we think of, sorry, I click hit the wrong button again. The oil price was in mildly negative territory in here today, so it hasn't quite been able to push up and out of this range, and that weakness came through in just the last hour of trading. The range has been in the order of about $6, and this is the second one of those. And as long as that's the magnitude of the reaction, then we can probably continue to give the benefit of the doubt to continued upside. Now, when we look at what's going on in Wall Street, the S&P 500 was pretty much unchanged, but it is closing twice now above that psychological 2800 point level, but hasn't quite been able to muster the wherewithal to push away from it. And the Nasdaq has been outperforming on the upside, but it was in mildly negative territory in here today. And that is, I think, a standout because it has now clearly broken its sequence of lower rally highs. The Russell 2000 has been lagging, and it was also in mildly negative territory in here today, but at least it is trading at in the region of the trend mean. The fact that we have government bond yields on a global basis, which are starting to contract, that is representative of the conclusion from bond investors that we are at the top of the interest rate cycle, not just in the USA, but probably globally. Then if we look at the outlook for stock markets, there are two competing arguments, and that's perhaps not so surprising considering the fact that we've been in a range for much of the last year. The one argument is that the economy has slowed down and there is a threat to earnings. The other argument is that this was a blip and that there is the potential for re-acceleration, not least because we're at the top of the interest rate cycle. So there is the potential that we're going to have an additional pop on the upside if these psychological areas of resistance can be overcome. And I continue to pay particular attention to Amazon because it has been the share where there has been the clearest buy the dip mentality, not just recently, but over the course of the last decade. And I'm going to post a. Actually, I can simply find the chart that I created earlier on. And that would probably be the easiest way to do it. When we look at the size of the reactions on Amazon on a percentage basis, it really didn't pull back by more than 30% on any occasion during the advance, all the way up to the pullback we've seen recently, and that was approximately $35. So that was the largest reaction we've had in the course of the bull market to date in both nominal and percentage terms, but we've had an impressive rebound. So that low at the that was put in December is going to be an incredibly important touchstone, both in terms of the advance that we've seen in Amazon, which has gone from around $35 to almost $1,700 at present. So this is an incredibly impressive performance. It has been the go-to share for investors over the course of the bull market. As long as it can sustain a move above $1,700, then that is likely to be seen as a really encouraging sign for a lot of investors. If on the other hand it fails, well, there's a good chance it's going to take investor sentiment with it. So I think this is one of the big barometers for this particular bull market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.